If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Well, I gave everybody equity, and I think, you know, there's a lot of talented people out there that are looking to participate in something bigger. So the first goal we set is let's, as a group, take down our first billion. And so as a hive, as a group, you know, everybody getting a piece of a $1 billion portfolio is a lot different than one guy going out there and trying to syndicate 30 or 40, 50 million, right?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Hey, Dylan, welcome to the show.
What's happening? Thank you for having me here.
Oh, man, this is great.
This is the Bitcoin conference, right?
It is. No. I'm so
sorry. Shoot.
Wrong call, buddy.
Wrong podcast.
Call. Yeah, wrong podcast. This is not the gamblers episode. This is where we talk about how to buy cash flowing assets. I'm so
All
sorry.
Right, let's talk about that.
Hey, man, do me a favor and give us just your quick bio so our listeners have an idea of who it is they're talking to or listening to, rather, I guess.
Yeah.
Listening to.
All right. I'll try to do my best here in 30 seconds or less. So those of you who don't know, Borland Capital, Dylan Borland over at Borland Capital Partners. I mean, in essence, we're a private family office. We focus on real estate. Private equity is our specialty. You know, I've been investing in real estate since 2006. I started, Sam, in the single family space, you know, fixing and flipping a lot of houses, had a single family portfolio, and then moved all of my cards into the multifamily space early 2015. And since then, I've never looked back. We've deployed about almost about $400 million in real estate private equity over the last, 5 or 6 years. And that's what we like to do. We like to syndicate real estate. We like to get involved with good people, good partners, and provide as much value as we can out there.
That is amazing. So you sold your portfolio in 2015 of single family, or you just transitioned?
Transitioned. I had 108 single family rentals. We were doing about 100 fix and flips a year. In a bad year, about 150 fix and flips was our best year here in Metro Detroit. We did that for about a decade. And then I wanted to scream and realize that buying one house after another, you wake up every day, it turns into a job, you know, and cash flow in this business is most important. So consolidated, put all my cards into the multifamily space, and never looked back.
Right. So how have you gone from, you know, getting out of the single family space, which that's a ton. I mean, just for those of you who are listening, you should cringe when you hear 150 flips in a year. So how did you go from, like, you exit the single family space and you say, all right, you know what? I want to get into multifamily because that seems to make sense. How in the thunder in such a short period of time have you deployed 400? Now you've deployed 400 million in equity, or that's assets under management?
Equity. Yeah. So just the equity component, it's close to about $1.5 billion.
Yeah. Right.
In real estate.
Have you partnered with other people to do that? Have you been just deploying capital, or are you guys also the active owners of the property? Are you the active GP?
Yeah. Yeah. No, good question. So we've got a model that works really, really well for us. I'm always looking for the most efficient process possible. And I started very early on with 12 units and getting involved and doing a lot of self-management. We realized that wasn't very exciting. And so we started buying units. We discovered very quickly after our second 12-unit property, we needed to go bigger. We needed to go 100 units because 100 units could support on-site management, on-site maintenance. So boom, now we can kind of get out of the service calls. We can get out of dealing with the tenants and the leasing. And then from there, we still didn't want to work that much. And so we started a new model. This has been a few years now that's been working really well for us. So we focus on buying properties that are about 100 to 300 units nationwide. We, of course, they're large enough, and your audience knows this, with the cash flows there to support on-site leasing, on-site maintenance. Then we underwrite with hiring third-party property managers. And then on top of that, we align ourselves with what we call operational partners. So we have a very large student base, for example. We have a lot of people that come to us and bring us opportunities. They're obviously looking for equity. And so what we do is we'll put them in a position to be an operational partner, where what that really means is they're doing all the work. They're doing the day-to-day. They're managing the property managers. They're executing the value-add strategy under our supervision. Then our team will bring in all the financing and the equity. So at some point, I actually get it down to, on a lot of our assets, checking in once a quarter, you know, checking on the physical condition of it, checking on obviously making sure the plan's being executed every year, annual plan, you know, our income, our expense plan. So we've got a pretty lean, mean machine, and we just keep repeating that process. So we just keep, you know, we deploy capital, as you had indicated at the beginning of this, through two fashions, either direct syndications or through our fund. And we just keep lining up deals, lining up operational partners and putting in. I gave an example of how fast we're able to scale. I took 2.5 years off after we exited our last portfolio. I just put a team together at the beginning of November. Nobody's ever worked together. We're all friends. We've never worked together before. And today is what, March 9th? So between November and now, we've been able to put under contract another $330 million in assets that we're currently closing on in that very short window.
Holy smokes.
Just using that system. Yeah, five people. We've never worked together. You know, we're friends. We all have different backgrounds. But we said, hey, let's build another portfolio together. And that's what we're doing. So a couple months, there we are. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, I've got loads of questions then. I'm not even sure where to start. How did you develop the framework? Because it sounds like you have a framework that is basically wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
How did you develop that?
Yeah. It's like McDonald's, man. We've got a pretty lean, mean assembly machine there. So I'm always systems focused, right? Letting systems and processes work for me. But what I really focused on and what I tell a lot of our students is, you know, assemble the team first. You know, I took a year studying billionaires, and billionaires will tell you if they're the smartest one in the room, it's a bad day. And so, you know, how did we scale so quickly? All I did is find the right people and put the right people in the right seats. And that was my first focus, right? And so building a team, and on our channel on YouTube, I actually have this exact model that we use. It's called building the multifamily dream team or something like that. And we've used it in the past, but allows us to scale, right? Very, very quickly. And so what does it entitle? It entitles, you know, having somebody that's good at underwriting, having somebody in charge of that, having somebody who's good at the marketing and keeping the marketing consistent. We do a lot of prospecting for off-market opportunities. That's a machine that's always going. We have a model there that we repeat, rinse and repeat. And then it's having three people on that team focus on, we brought in people on the team that have experience in three categories of equity. So we could tackle pretty much every deal under the sun. The first category being kind of your private individual, your high net worth, the guy who's putting in 100, 250, 500,000. So we brought in somebody on our team that has experience, has an extensive database of individuals that are looking to invest in that capacity. Those are really good for deals that require $2 to $3 million in equity. Then filling a seat on the team with somebody who has experience with family offices. Those are the guys who are going to bring in the $3 to $5 million checks. So when we're doing deals that require $10 million in equity, we can kind of backfill with some of the smaller guys, and a lot of the equity is the bigger guys. And then we brought somebody on the team and put them in a seat that is good with institutional relationships, right? So life insurance companies, pension funds. And so we can cover a broad spectrum of real estate with three people focused on three different categories of private equity. So like right now, we're closing on a deal in Vegas, $113 million, $45 million in equity. We've got another deal in Portland, Texas. You know, it only requires $3 million in equity. But by having those three different categories and people in those seats that you brought in with the existing experience, it's not training day, right? I went out and found people that have the experience, already have the relationships, put them on the seat. We can just scale at lightning speed.
Yeah, and that sounds great, but there's got to be some reason for those people to want to come. I mean, okay, you at this point, you've got a track record, you've got a system, people know who you are.
Yeah.
But for the average guy off the street, you know, he can't necessarily coax three people with a deep bench of experience. Hey, come work with me. Like, you know, what's the motivation? So how do you overcome that?
Well, I gave everybody equity. And I think, you know, there's a lot of talented people out there that are looking to participate in something bigger. So the first goal we set is let's, as a group, take down our first billion. And so as a hive, as a group, you know, everybody getting a piece of a $1 billion portfolio is a lot different than one guy going out there and trying to syndicate 30 or 40, 50 million, right?
Sure.
And so it's kind of that collective effort, that abundance effort, giving people, hey, look, and there's a bigger picture here. And if we do this right, we can get there very quickly. but I give everybody equity. You know, my goal when I started this was to build a team with very talented people, people that share similar core values and beliefs, and have fun while we're doing it. And I gave everybody a piece of the pie. You know, I lay it all out on our video. I lay it all out on our website. For example, I get 28% of the pie. My other partner gets 28% of the pie. Our marketing team gets 5%. Our due diligence team gets 10%. So people are motivated then because they're working for a piece of $1 billion in real estate. That's how we were able to attract talent. You know, instead of just trying to do it all myself and I want to own the whole thing myself, man, let's just go out and have fun. We're all going to be happy at the end of the day if you have, you know, a third of $1 billion in real estate.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's not bad.
It's not a bad day. Right.
So what were some of the, and I'm not looking for your exact hows, but really high level, I mean, acquiring 330 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's 5 months. If you started November, December, you got 5 months as of this recording. The word on the street is that margins are thin and deals are hard to find, but you're somehow finding, you know, over $250 million in deals.
Yeah.
What's that look like?
Yeah, we find a lot of deals. Deals are something that we've gotten really good at. Of course, we focus on off market. So our strategy, we move in 90-day cycles. So every 90 days, we'll ramp up our marketing. We'll put under contract 3 or 4 properties, scale back, and then keep that process going, moving every 90 days. But in essence, like I tell our students, when we go into a marketplace, we'll choose 2 or 3 different states. So in this case, we're heavily focused right now on Tennessee. We're heavily focused on Florida. We're heavily focused on Michigan. And we'll build out lists on CoStar of all on and off market properties. And we will hit the ground. We will hammer that list. We will run mailings. Mailings seem to work best in this space. So we'll mail to those owners very consistently every single week over a 90-day cycle. And if we're not, you know, mailers take about 35, 45 days for phone calls to start coming in. So in the meantime, our team is on the phones, you know, prospecting and building relationships and reaching out to owners and kicking up deals. So that's, you know, the primary way that we get a lot of deals coming in, off market opportunities. We're not competing out there with everybody else for the highest price and terms. Very rarely do we buy on market deals. And then the other thing is, and people that know me know, we run a course called the Ultimate Real Estate Investing Course. We have over 2,000 students in that right now. And all of the students are learning to invest in syndications and multifamily. And our proposal to them is when you find a deal, we'll bring you on as the operational partner at 25%. We'll give you we'll bring in all the equity. We'll bring on the financing. So we have almost 2,000 students nationwide. Now, not all of them are active. A small fraction of them are actually active.
Sure.
But they're all out there bringing in deal flow as well too. And then naturally they turn to us, you know, to be a partner with them. And so they're doing the same thing. They're out there building out lists. They're sending out mailers. They're making phone calls. They're getting deals under contract. They're making sure when they get them under contract, they're in, you know, our expectation in terms of returns. And if everything makes sense, we jump in. It's been a great relationship.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think that's something people probably overlook as from the, you know, from the education platform side.
Yeah.
Is the built-in deal finders that you end up, you know, and end up partnering with, you know, in the future. That's super cool.
I never anticipated that, Sam. You know, my goal is just to provide value and give back. We've given away more than we've actually sold in the course. I didn't build a course to be a guru and sell courses. I built the course to help and provide value to people, right? And so most of the time we give access to that course away. And I wasn't expecting that to be the natural repercussion, you know, students bringing us deals, but then they just naturally say, hey, I got a deal. Do you want a partner? And we started thinking, yeah, sure. Why not? Right. And so, you know, we launched in 2018 and it's just transformed. I think a lot of people go into the course space with the intention of selling courses, generating revenue and profits, but they're missing the fact that it's not about that. Right. I mean, it's, you know, the real value is teaching a student to go out and find a deal and that student bringing the deal to you and you guys being partners on it, man. I can make, you know, on a deal we recently did, our team's making a $500,000 syndication fee, $300,000 a year in gross income as a GP, and almost $2 million at exit. And that was from a student in the course. Now, how many courses do I have to sell as a guru to try to make that type of a return, right? And everybody wins. The student wins, the investor wins, we win. So I think people sometimes get focused on the wrong objective. You know, they go into the guru space and the course space, and they're so worried about protecting their proprietary learning information and performance. We give all that stuff away, man. You know, we're trying to help people. We're trying to change lives. And, you know, that's what it's about, man.
Absolutely.
They're focused on the small fish. They're focused on the wrong things. So what, you sell 100,000 a year in courses, congratulations. Right. You know, like, you're wasting your time.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's fantastic. Good for you. Good for you. And it's funny that came as an unanticipated benefit.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, wait, people want a course. Yeah, we can work together. This makes sense. That's super cool. That's super cool. So let me get this right.
So we use the course as a tool, man, to change lives. You know, in anything that we do sell from the course, I don't take, we actually donate it. We've donated over 700,000 in proceeds from the course so far. So people that do join the course, we just donate it to people and charities in need. So we're able to amplify those that effort of giving.
Right, right. Well, you answered my question 3 of our final 4.
Okay.
But I'll give you a chance maybe to shine some more light on that when we get there. You had mentioned that come or November of 2020, you guys basically had a clean slate. So did that mean you had unloaded all of your assets previous or up to that point?
Yeah, we sold our last portfolio. It was a $100 million portfolio. We sold that. The last asset closed, I think it was late 2019. We took some time off. I anticipated, and I didn't know a pandemic was going to happen, but I anticipated a shift in the market. So we sold everything and I took some time off. And then, of course, things happened early 2020 and I spent most of that year traveling. And then I got back in, I said October, I wanted to come back, build a new team, build a new portfolio. And here we are.
How did you select? I know you picked those 5 people, but these clearly weren't the same 5 people that you had worked with before.
Yeah.
So how did you start a new team without calling some of the old teammates and not pissing everybody off in the process?
Yeah. No. So a lot of the old team, when we exited our portfolio, went on and did their own thing, you know, and started building their own portfolios and have also achieved quite a bit. My last partner, I think, is well over $100 million now in assets. As well. And, you know, relationships change, values change. And, you know, part of the reason for the exit of the last portfolio is just a little bit of a difference in opinions and things like that. And so, you know, no hard feelings. And we put together a new team that's focused on bigger things, bigger objectives. And the team is really made up of friends in this space that I've built, family, you know, one of my partners is a member of a billion-dollar family office. And so he's got a seat on the team. Another friend of mine has been friends for 6 years. He sold a couple $1 billion in real estate as an agent. He's on our team and he's got a great network, kind of like a Grant Cardone. You know how he's out there crowdsourcing and raising money from the little guys? He's excellent at that. Our underwriter actually came from our student network. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were able to leverage our student network. I spent the first 30 days, I gave myself 90 days to take a step back and really focused on this team before we started taking down assets. It only took me about 30 days putting the word out there through YouTube, through LinkedIn, through our student database, you know, looking for the people for the right fit. So it took us about 30 days and then we got our first deal December 4th. And we've been moving fast and furious since. So.
Right, right. And talk to us about your fund a little bit. You guys do all of this as a fund structure. Is that right?
2 things. So we do have a fund that we raised beginning of 2020 because we knew that the market was going to shift and we wanted to be very liquid. So we raised our largest fund, which was a $200 million fund. It was our 4th fund. So we did that at the beginning of 2020 with the intentions of just being really liquid to take advantage of things when, you know, it hits the wall here, which is coming up. And so that was the first objective. Now the fund, we deploy capital from the fund, but it's more long-term wealth preservation. So we look for typical class A deals, 7 to 10 years. We're okay with 5 to 6% on our cash. We're tucking money in and preserving it long-term. So that's kind of the idea behind the fund and the capital behind that fund. A lot of people just want to tuck money into real estate for a long time. And that's the idea, wealth preservation. The other way that we deploy capital is just what we do best, syndications, value add stuff. You know, and they don't conflict with each other because they're 2 different strategies. So our primary business is syndicating value add multifamily real estate, mostly 200 to 300 units, $15 to $30 million deals, repositioning the assets route in 5 years or less. Our investors are earning 8 to 10% on their cash, 20% or above IRRs. And that's kind of our bread and butter. And so when we get a good institutional quality class A deal, we'll deploy the fund. You know, these guys in the fund, you know, when you get into the institutional space, you're going to hear, Dylan, don't call me. My minimum check is 50 million. My minimum check is 100 million, right? And this is a real problem these institutions have to solve. And so that's what that capital is used for, the $100 million deals, $150 million deals. And then the smaller stuff that those funds would never participate in, you're not going to get a check for $3 million, $5 million, $9 million from the funds. Forget it, right? It's not even worth the paperwork. And you'll hear that when you get into that space.
Sure.
And so that's what we use the syndication strategy for, the value add strategy there.
Right, right. Yeah, because the deal size becomes too small for them to
even look at.
Right. I mean, they can't cover costs. They can't cover cost underwriting a deal like that. Even at a 2% acquisition fee, they're still underwater by the time the thing gets across the finish line.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting problem to have, right? I've got a fund now that's made up of 7 pension funds, and they've got to deploy $1 billion every quarter. But there's not very many markets in the US you can buy deals at 100. I mean, you're looking at Florida, you're looking at New York, possibly Denver and Colorado, obviously California, but the cap rates are terrible out there. So, you know, it's a real challenge for institutional investors. And, you know, anybody can do it. You got to go out and just decide kind of what path you want to fit in real estate and where you want to see yourself going, you know?
Were I know you said this about one of your team members really was the one that had this Rolodex of contacts in this space. Did you have any experience with institutional money before 2015?
Yeah. So all of our funds are primarily made up of, so this is my 4th fund. My first one I launched in 2010 was a $10 million fund. And then usually there were 20, 28 million, our second one was 20, our third one was 28. This one is 200. They're all mostly all institutional investors and family offices. And I first started, you can buy a subscription to a service called P&I Online. And I think it's $5,000 or $6,000 for the subscription. But it will give you access to the largest institutional investors in the United States. And it will tell you, you know, how much they're allocating towards alternative investments. And out of that alternative investment allocation, how much is towards real estate. And I just started prospecting those. You know, I called all 1,100 pension funds and life insurance companies that year when I raised my first fund. And that's it, man. Just calling them, building relationships, flying out, meeting with them, you know, understanding what they want to look for. I mean, we're just here to serve them at the end of the day. You know, that's all it's about. You know, our investors, whether those are institutional or family offices or private investors, it's not rocket science. You know, figure out what they want to invest in, keep good records on that. When you get something that makes sense, put it in front of them, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. Let's take a quick left turn here before we wrap this up, because I'd love to hear, and this has been, we could keep going on this. I'm really enjoying this. So I've got many more questions, but we're out of time, which is, I hate that.
Okay.
I mean, have to come back on. But here, mindset. I was doing some reading on you, and you are a big mindset, I think, kind of person. So help walk us through some of the things that you have found that were previous limiting beliefs for you, maybe that you have been able to overcome with a change in mindset.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I'm a little bit unique because I was, I guess, just gifted the ability. I'm just, you know, call it confident, but I like the adventure. I like the thrill. And there's never been a time in my life where I'm blessed in the fact that I've always been self-motivated. You know, I'm fueled with a mission of providing value to other people. I think that plays a big role in it. You know, I have a deep, genuine desire to add value to people's lives. So I've never needed to be self-motivated. Limiting beliefs, I never really had any, to be honest with you. You know, if somebody says, let's do a $200 million deal, sure, why not, right? And, you know, I just, in my mind, there's never a scenario where I can't do it. And I've always been that way. Now, that's very unique. You know, most of our students, I don't coach our students to teach them how to do real estate. I teach them how to come over bad habits and mental blocks and barriers. I mean, that's the difference. That's the primary factor between whether somebody succeeds at what they want to do or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to just limiting beliefs. And so, you know, having a, you know, the mind is a difficult thing to work on. It really is. You know, that's people's worst enemy, man, to get it to stop thinking and yes, I can do this. And the longer life goes on and the more you get beat up, the more challenging that gets. So that's a loaded question. How do you, you know, that's deep stuff, man. You know, I think it's very important for people to start with small wins. You know, consistency is very important in this space. And so things like just going to bed at the same time every day and waking up at the same time every day, you know, it's practicing consistent habits. Before we can start working on the mind, we got to start breaking some bad habits. And then, you know, the mind will start to convince itself once it sees something's achievable. And it can't be achievable until we start fixing the bad habits or preventing it to be there in the beginning, until we fix the resistance that's there, you know, to our opinions on things, right? And we start to transform all of that stuff. And so once we start to fix the habits and we get the mind starting to get aware of catching these things, then we can get into, you know, the I can achieve anything type of thing. But the wins are very important. If you don't have a win, your mind's going to say it's not possible. So we focus on our students making sure they get wins, you know, in that 90-day period, because if it goes longer than that, people start to give up. They start to get deflated, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
It's critical that we get you on the right track. We hold you accountable and we get you a win as fast as possible, or else you're going to think it's not possible. Your mind doesn't think it's possible until you actually do it. Oh, wow, I can do that, you know?
Right.
And then that snowballs. Ah, okay, I can do this. I do have the ability, you know? So there's a lot that goes into it, man.
There is. And I love the idea of a win. You know, I always say momentum begets momentum. It's like, you gotta get a little bit of movement going on. And then the next thing you know, like you always see the people, you know, we'll use an example like, oh, I wasn't, you know, we had no money. And then all of a sudden we're doing $300 million in deals. It's like, yeah, well, there was a lot of momentum that was building up to that though, too, of previous wins, like you're talking about, and things that help you really grow with speed. So that's really cool. Dylan, let's jump into the final four here if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Consistency is key, you know, in whatever you're doing, focus on consistency and adding value. So consistency in your daily schedule and your activities every single day in and out, doing the same dang thing. And that's where a lot of people fail. And then this is where I see a lot of people fail in any business, is thinking about themselves versus anybody else. What do I get? What am I going to make? You know, what am I going to do? And I think that if you focus genuinely and unconditionally on providing value to other people, you can't lose. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. You know, they're always focused on me, the survival. And it's hard when you're in a survival situation, and you don't know how you're going to pay the bills, but you got to take that out of the equation. You know, if I could help point people in the right direction, you've got to detach from what do you get and focus on how can I genuinely provide value to other people. And you can't lose if you're helping other people. You just can't.
That's great. You know, what is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
You know, I think what keeps me sharp is our course and our students, you know, showing up every week and doing the coaching with them. By talking to them, it's just a mirror to myself. I'm just kind of repeating things I already know, and I'm solidifying, just keeping that at the forefront, our principles and our practices and our systems. And it actually, the students don't realize it keeps me sharp, you know? So, you know, the course and coaching the students every single week, it keeps us sharp for sure.
Right. That's great. You may have answered this earlier, but when it comes to giving back, what is one thing you were doing to make the world a better place?
Yeah, well, I started, so I give a lot. You know, we give away the course, we give away the coaching, we give away the student base, we donate all the proceeds from the course. And then we just launched called the Borland Love Foundation. And our initiative right now is we are giving $1,000 a week away to people in need. And my goal is to get other people to join in that mission. I'd like to make it $100,000 a week, you know, on top of what we're donating. So you can find that at borlandcapital.com, the Borland Love, Spread the Love Foundation. And I don't ask why. I don't care. You know, if somebody shows up to the website, they need help, they need $1,000. I don't care. I don't want to know why. I'm not here to judge. If you need help, fill out the form. We choose people at random every week. Every week we're giving away $1,000. So my mission is to really turn that into $100,000 a week. So that's what I'm trying to do.
How fun is that? That's a great goal. That's a great goal. Yeah. That would be a lot of fun, I would think, to get to do.
A lot of people out there need a lot of help, man. You know, I'm not here to judge. So
Right. No, that's super cool, man. Dylan, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
The best thing is you can go to dylanborland.com. That's a great way to access everything about Dylan Borland, or you can go to borlandcapital.com as well, too.
For those of you who are listening, that is B-O-R-L-A-N-D, so borlandcapital.com.
Correct. Thank you.
Dylan, thanks so much for the time today. Certainly appreciate it. It was great.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.